Hello and welcome to The Dirt, NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We are thrilled to bring you weekly podcasts covering a wide variety of topics from industry leaders. You can listen to all our past episodes through Apple iTunes or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We are glad you are joining us today. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Dirt, NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We are closing in on the start of the season, and no one gets there faster, truly, than Division II coaches across the country, and we are thrilled to have Aaron Kinberger with us today from St. Leo. Coach, thank you so much for joining us to talk a little bit about preseason practice and planning.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You know, one thing that is crazy is it's January 11th right now. This airs on the 12th, but January 11th right now. And I'm thinking, gosh, so much of the country is still not in spring. And we can leave that conversation for a different day. But truly, your season is around the corner. You guys opened that first week of February. What is it about this time of year that you love the most as a coach when you think about planning and practicing and getting ready for that first game?
I think my favorite part about it is the energy and the excitement that the girls come back with. In the spring, it hits different. They come back and like they can feel season like at their fingertips. So that energy that they bring is dynamic and super motivating.
And is it the same for your staff? You know, when you all sit around in your staff meetings and you're thinking about practice and things you want to work on, does the energy just feel a little different for you all too?
Yeah, it's almost like the pressure and the 3-week timeline to like make it all come together from the fall, the winter break, and all that. It's kind it's got a different edge to it. I think you feel butterflies, or at least I do, when we sit down and we start thinking about it, and just talking about it right now, like kind of gets me excited, and also a little bit of a nerve kicks in. And I think that that's what kind of keeps you alive and keeps you great, is that feeling in your gut where you're under the gun and like, you know, you've got to accomplish a lot in a short amount of time.
So many coaches have that feeling that, oh, I'm never going to be ready. We can't be ready. How much do you really try to prepare for? I mean, the longer you do this, you have to realize you're right. Like, we will not have practiced every situation by the time we throw our first pitch.
I sure try like hell though. I believe that we can cover a majority of the things. I think that we structure our fall around, you know, team concept as well as individual concept. So like our goal is to educate in the fall so that when they come back in the spring, we can touch on it and then like touch back and then keep it running into the season. So I think like our fall is designed to prepare us for spring. And then January, these 3 weeks, we work on, you know, refreshing that knowledge and continuing to implement it more at game speed as we get closer to game. But I think that, you know, my goal as a coach and our goal as a staff is to kind of work our way backwards from opening weekend. And our goal is to, you know, what is the game going to demand of them physically and mentally, and make sure that, you know, we're working in those directions. So I say we work our way backwards is because like, I always ask my staff, like, what do we need? What does this team need to do well to win? And how are we going to put ourselves in a position to win opening weekend? What are the basic things that have to be perfected? And it comes down to, you know, for example, for us, like our defense, runs off of communication. So our team communication is really crucial to our success. So we put a lot of focus there. Signs, you know, our goal is to not only come out of opening weekend 6-0, but it's to not miss any signs, because that's how we communicate staff to players. And that's how we set, you know, set things up as a team to try to beat our opponent. So we implement signs, you know, throughout the weeks and build those up so that when we get into game, the signs are not an aspect of an emotion for them. I think that we try to ask what the game's going to demand and then minimize those emotions for game day. So if we know that opening weekend, there's going to be music playing during pregame warmup, we try to eliminate that emotion and that overexcitement of music by practicing with the music on. Just little tiny minute details like that, you know, we try to, again, mentally and physically prepare them.
Well, so much of spring practices are different than fall. And if you are brand new to a collegiate program, you know, whether it's a freshman or a transfer or whatever it might be, what's the feeling for the team? How would you describe the differences? And you've already started to a little bit, but of that fall practice versus what you're really trying to get after in the spring from a preparedness perspective?
I think the biggest thing, the difference that we want the kids to experience from fall to spring is, again, fall, like we want them to have that game knowledge, that why are we doing what we're doing? You know, we always say here that, like, you know, we want to teach you the game. We don't want puppets. Like, we're not trying to manipulate the game. We're trying to teach it to you so that you can play it. And I think that for us, I mean, it's just a clear expectation and understanding that the fall is going to be a slower, more educated, more individual based focus. And the spring is well known throughout our program. Like, when we come back in the spring, like, it's not about the individual, it's about the team, and everything that we're gearing towards becomes team driven. How is the individual going to help the team reach the common goal that we have? And that common goal every day is pretty simple. I mean, every time we lace our cleats up, we're looking to win. We're looking to produce a W together. So I think the biggest transition is just for the new kids at this level, freshmen, transfers, is just taking the fall that's a little bit more of a slower pace educational to hitting the ground running in the spring, where, you know, the game speed is crucial in preparation for success for season opening. So that game speed is something that definitely is probably the biggest adjustment that they have to make.
Sure. And, you know, you talk about the individual concepts and the team concepts. And one question that gets kicked around a lot between coaches in the spring is who gets the majority of your reps? And it's an interesting debate of, does everyone on the team get the equal amount of reps when it comes to hitting time and fielding time? Or once you start to get in the spring, is there a higher emphasis placed on the players who you feel will get the most game reps, you know, 1 month in, or maybe even 3 months in?
I mean, I feel pretty passionate about this. The way I run our program here and my staff is, everyone's going to get equal opportunity. Everybody's going to have the opportunity in practice to earn playing time. We talk about, you know, you earn playing time in practice, not in games. But for us, we definitely focus, like, if every single kid gets the same amount of reps, because I feel like it takes an army, you know, to win at this level. You're playing 56 games and postseasons, more games than that. And I think the worst position a coach or a program could put themselves in is you put in 80% of your time into a select few, and then, you know, adversity hits. And then now I feel like the team's been let down because you had a majority of your focus in this select few, but then now you need Susie over here, who's been getting half the reps, to step in and do and be an everyday player. And now Susie lacks the confidence, she lacks the reps. And I just really kind of have like a one for all, you know, mentality in our program here. So I believe they all deserve the same amount of reps. May the best woman win. And, you know, we always say work while you wait here. So, you know, even if you're not a starter per se, you know, there's going to come a point in time where you have a strength that the team needs, you know, to produce a W. So we want everyone prepared for that moment.
A message from our official sponsor, Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, dugout benches, and more. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or visit nettingpros.com. Follow at Netting Pros on social media for their latest projects. Now, back to the podcast.
So many times, you know, we have seen that over the course of the season where a really influential player is lost to a number of reasons, and it's the next person up and it's their success that really can determine the whole success of the team. And, you know, are you thinking about that as well in the early season when you have the opportunity to give a pinch hit here, two defensive innings there? Is that something that you're trying to do a lot in the preseason as well?
I would say that that's not necessarily a focus of mine. I mean, in the fall, there's more or less like, all right, like, you know, let's produce some opportunity to hear, see what her strengths are, what she can do. But in the spring, it's definitely more of who's got the better strength, and that's the one we're going with. There's not a whole lot of like, you know, we're up by 10, so we're gonna throw, you know, this pitcher or anything like that. We usually just stay tried and true in that moment for the whoever the best woman was initially is usually the one we're going with. But always open-minded though to utilizing somebody's strength, you know. And sometimes it's maybe not your best player, but it's her strength and she offers that in that moment, then we would make the change.
And I think so many times, you know, people are looking at those strengths and one way they can find them and really see them is implementing, and you talked about it from a game speed perspective, but those challenges in practice, really trying to see who rises to the top in so many of those scenarios. What are some of the ways you like to include competition and various challenges within your practice plans this time of the year?
We typically try to do something competitive every day. Our kids love, we have this thing called left side, right side. It's timed. The balls are counted. They've come up with the understanding that if we don't count the balls, then one coach could fungo more balls to one side than the other. I mean, we like to tap into that competitive edge. It also, I think, keeps them where their mind should be in game, and that's competitive and not so much mechanical or, you know, thinking about the ground ball versus just reacting to it and competing. So we try to implement competition on some level. I love anything that works multiple aspects of the game at game speed. So, you know, through that left side, right side, like week one, back at it in the spring, like we're just doing straight competition, fun goes left side, right side. And then next week, we'll start doing left side, right side, but we'll use, while we're fun going to left side, we'll have right side running bases and trying to score on left side. So that gives our outfielders, our catchers, the ability to read runners at game speed. It also gives our base runners opportunities to work and learn what they can do as a base runner and how we produce runs here at St. Leo, and allows me as the third base coach to work with them and make sure that I'm sharp for game day. Cause I think sometimes, you know, the kids forget that we need practice too, and we need to learn their individual speeds, but get ourselves ready for that game speed moment and decision-making. So those are some simple things that, like, you know, that's like, you know, one aspect of practice that we do that's competitive. That's also working double side, right, base running and defense at the same time. And those are some things that we really enjoy doing.
Now, another coach I talked to said that you are hands down far and away the toughest team to play early in the year because you're always so well prepared. So when you are thinking through that, you know, and you said earlier, you try like hell to, and kudos. And I think that's where everybody is, but do you have a master checklist? How are you determining, you know, what you need to cover, and what is the way that you determine, you know, order of importance, so to speak, so that you can build on maybe some of the early things that you're implementing into the nuances down the road?
Well, that's a great compliment. I think it kind of goes back to the initial where, like, I'll sit down and just visualize like game day one with this specific team, and what are our strengths, and what are some things that within our strengths that we can control, right? And that will put us in a position to win. So, you know, you can't always control if everybody 1 through 9 goes 1 for 3, right? That's kind of like an easy, like, you know, everybody 1 through 9 is going 1 for 3, like, you got a good shot to win kind of thing. But like, I try to look at like some of the intangibles, like the controllable factors of the game that can put us in a position to win, and try to do those little details great. Cause if we can focus on the things we can control, then, you know, the other things added to that, you know, usually result in success. So I don't have per se a master plan. I think it's just visualizing the future and being specific each year to each team. So yeah, there's some commonalities that I focus on. But it really does, like, I mean, it goes back to like communication. Like, that's huge for me, that like, I want them to, you know, be able to work together and be able to work with the staff. So like, we're doing a ton of pitcher, catcher, coach in the dugout calling pitches. We're doing a ton of communicative work right now in week 1, and we will continue that all the way up into game day. So that's not a stressor. That's not an emotional reaction, that we don't feel overwhelmed by trying to communicate with each other. Same thing with base running, defense, offense. I mean, it kind of goes back to, that's like one of the key things that I focus on, is just that unity, that team communication, understanding our why and what we're doing. Kind of like, I kind of reference it to them like playing checkers, you know, having a game plan and playing our St. Leo game. I think if we do those little tiny details, like, we will be able to beat our opponents. Cause I think when we face people early, I think the thing I see is that they don't really understand why they're doing what they're doing, you know, in first and third place, for example. So then it's really easy as their opponent to kind of pick it apart. Cause you can sniff out that they're not 100% sure of what they're doing. So then, you know, running on it becomes really easy. So, you know, I try to make sure that our team can't be picked apart easily.
Those are coach life goals for sure. And, you know, I know that so many things can bring challenges and being ready to go so soon after returning to campus. And some of those are things like volume and rest and recovery within your program. How do you monitor that? And what emphasis do you put on that with your student athletes?
It's so tough. I mean, each kid is different, right? Their recoveries are different. What they're like, you know, their volume levels are different. And I'm starting to learn that as I get older. And wiser, I guess, within this game. And I think something that really works for me individually is communication. So I think I'm a fairly tough coach. I'm tone deaf on some level. So I think transparency and honesty when it comes to monitoring volume, rest, recovery, is having that open line of communication where the player and myself, where they're comfortable to say, like, coach, like, my arm's kind of sore today, where from there we can tailor, you know, the volume, or we can figure out, okay, well, why is it sore? Is it sore from weights? Is it sore from throwing? Is it volume in terms of pitching, or is it volume in terms of weights, you know, and then pitching on top of it? But I think that for me and our players, it's definitely that transparent, honest communication to find out what works best for each individual. And I say balanced, like where they know that I care about them as people. And I always say something to them. I always say, hey, be smart, you know, be tough, but be smart. And I think that they know I expect them to be tough, but there's a time and a place. So knowing the difference of when to be smart and when to be tough, like when to push through and when to communicate so that we can, you know, rest that. So it's ready for game day kind of thing. So I think that's definitely a hard question to answer. And I think it's probably unique to each program. But I focus on per se, maybe not charting, you know, how many reps and all this other stuff. More so just communicating. And then if they are sore, recognizing again, like, what is the game going to demand of them? So like, I know in our, during our season, our conference play, we play single game Friday night, doubleheader Saturday. So they need to physically and mentally be prepared to throw 2 days in a row. And we're speaking of pitching, for example. So in the fall and the spring, we prepare them with a practice plan that the game's going to demand. So we typically throw Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So then that way now we're prepping them physically and mentally for throwing that double day with some rest days after that, which would mimic and model exactly what season's going to ask.
And keeping those lines of communication open are so pivotal throughout the entire spring, whether it's performance related or, you know, physical or emotional, whatever it might be. And, you know, you have conversations throughout the year on individual goals and contributions and some of those things. But are you talking about the expectations from an individual standpoint with student athletes ever? You know, if you have a pitcher that you expect to carry a huge workload, or if you have, you know, a catcher that is going to have a little bit of a different expectation, or are those things that you talk about throughout, or is that something that, you know, really works itself out throughout the season?
I think that we kind of utilize like individual goal setting. I want to know, I think pretty much how we set this up is like, I want to know what's important to them. Like, what do they want out of this year or their college career? You know, a lot of the time with freshmen coming in, they've had a goal to play at the college level their whole life. And then now they're here. And a lot of them kind of forget to set new goals, you know, like they're just here. Like they've reached their ultimate goal, and it's teaching them to utilize individual goals. Okay, so what do you want out of this? You want to be an All-American? You want to be All-Conference? You want to be All-Region? Like you want to help build like a winning program, a postseason program? Like what is it that you want out of this? And allowing them that individual freedom to kind of decide like what kind of player they want to be, and then utilizing that to transforming them into understanding how those individual goals are going to, you know, how they directly impact the program's goals, the big, you know, being a part of something bigger than yourself. And so I think in the fall this year, we did a lot of like small goal setting, like individual goal setting. And that was really more or less just to help them focus, you know, just their little bit of daily work, right? That dedication of just like 10, 15 minutes doing something that's going to work in the direction of a goal that they had. Because something that we talk a lot about here is the key to greatness is consistency. You know, if you can consistently do something, consistently work at something, that's where greatness is going to start to evolve. So using individual goals in that realm, and also I think educating them and teaching them like what is a successful college athlete, and you know, what kind of a mark do you want to leave individually and then ultimately as a program? I think we use like benchmarks, you know, like we go through and look at stats in the sense of you know, what's a good benchmark if they need help, like as a staff, like a pitching staff, understanding like what's it going to take for this group of women in this bullpen to be effective against offenses. We use that more or less to just like check in to see like are we working in the right direction.
It's so much of that reframing and really understanding the next goal, I think, is huge. I remember coaching a team once and the goal was NCAA regionals, and it had been so long and the team was capable of so much. And so they win their conference, they win the conference tournament, they're going on to regionals. And it was almost as if that first game of regionals, they didn't know what to do next because they had already accomplished their goal. And they really struggled to find the next victory for them and probably end up shortchanging their season just a little bit because they weren't prepared for that. So I like that idea of, you know, talking to those athletes, whether it is individual or team, and making sure they're thinking about not only what's important to them, but what's next, and being able to move, you know, readily from one thing to the next when the opportunity arises, you know, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about this a little bit already, Erin, but I wanted to kind of go back to it. You talked about what do we need to do for this team to be successful? And I think so much we worry about our opponent. Do you find yourself in this first tournament really studying the people on the schedule and getting into their scouting reports more? Or do you find yourself really focusing on your team and the things you want to do with your team to play to their own strengths more?
Our focus is definitely on our own team. I think that we utilize what we know about our opponent to prep our strengths or ways we think that our team can beat them. We don't really talk about our opponent much. We don't build them up, or we don't talk them up or talk them down. So like, we talk a lot about a faceless opponent. We talk a lot about, you know, trying to stack up W's in the column and who those W's come from are irrelevant. So we don't do a lot of talking about our opponent. So like, first, you know, if we know we're going to face a rise ball pitcher, you know, that whole week of prep leading up to that series or that opponent would be, you know, laying off the rise or getting on top of it, looking low in the zone, better said than laying off the rise, because we don't like to talk in negatives here. So like, we want to talk about what we want to do, but you know, we'll prep them for that kind of stuff through focuses and drills and different, you know, planning stuff throughout the week, but we don't do a whole lot of talking about the opponent. We just try to get them to play St. Leo softball great, and then let the chips fall where they fall.
As you progress through the year and some of the teams you are more familiar with, whether they're conference teams or just someone that regularly finds themselves on the schedule, how do you develop a scouting report? What do you share with the team, with the coaches? You know, how do you divvy those tasks up of scouting reports with the other team? What does that prep look like for you and your staff?
So it's definitely a team effort. And the cool thing about our staff, and I think that we love, is like, we always approach everything kind of round table. So everyone sees something different in stats or in videos, and putting all of those thoughts together is really unique and fun. And it's interesting what everybody brings to the table with that. But it basically, like, you know, I'm kind of old school, so like, I'll print the stat lines and go through and see if I can find correlations. And like, I'm really big on trying to shut down like one or two to three hitters in a lineup. So I'll put a lot of focus in controlling those kids. And I won't put emphasis on it for our pitchers, other than, you know, this is our goal against, you know, number 14. So again, I won't build that hitter up much. I'll just give her our task against her. And then obviously it's open communication. So like, if the pitcher sees something against number 14, she'll bring it and it'll get added to the scouting report in the moment. We do use 6-4-3, which is pretty awesome and allows us to kind of tailor our scouting reports. We usually only work off what we have though, from video, stat lines, you know, past games. Like we have charts that, you know, the goal is to chart them from freshman year all the way through senior year, and kind of pick up on tendencies through our own individual charts. We don't reach out to other people for scouting reports. Mainly because I think everybody sees the game different and everybody has something different. Not to say you won't pick up one or two like key things potentially from somebody else's scouting report, like, hey, this kid's like pull heavy power, you know, things like that. But I kind of find that again, like I try not to waste too much time, like working outside of our own, of ourselves. So, yeah, that's pretty much how our scouting goes. And then communicated to the team. Like I said, I just try to keep it really simple. I just try to like make sure the pitchers know like, hey, this kid is dangerous on inside. So like, we're going to look to dominate out. The second we get her thinking out, that's when we'll pop her in. So they have very simple approaches.
You know, and it's always funny when you think about gathering scouting reports from other teams, because you're absolutely right. They're so different. And if I'm looking at a scouting report and it says, you know, crushes change and my pitcher's best pitch is a change, it's not that I'm never going to throw it. I mean, you would be doing such a disservice to, you know, your own abilities and your team's abilities. And so I think that it's really important for coaches to understand that. It seems like eons ago, we would all spend so much time, I'll trade you X for Y. It was like trading card bonanza day. And now it's a lot different. But, you know, I know there are things that you probably want to try to keep off of your scouting report, though, as well, when you think of, you know, what teams learn about you. Are there things that you don't do early in the year or that you might not do as much of in order to try to play the cat and mouse game a little bit? Or is it, hey, this is who we are and we're going to bring it. And if you beat us, you beat us.
Yeah. I just don't think I'm that smart, Joanna. Like I don't play cat and mouse very well, I suppose, but no, I think we are who we are from start to finish. And I mean, I might switch up like some tendency, you know, like just common sense stuff. Like if we're stealing first pitch a lot, I might switch it to second pitch or, you know, little things like that, where if I feel like they're picking up on a tendency. But a lot of the time, like they have to prove to be able to not just because they recognize a tendency doesn't mean they can beat us on it either. So I think it goes back to that philosophy of just like stay focused on doing your job great and doing what your program does well. And yeah, if you beat us, you beat us. And if you don't, then hopefully we played St. Leo softball to its fullest.
Absolutely. And if you can steal on the first pitch, why put it off? You know, I mean, if you can do it, then by all means, you should do it. You know, when you are thinking about your career and, you know, you've been fortunate to see several seasons with the same program and had some great success. So when you think about that and some of the things that shake out over the course of a preseason, and I've just tried to think about what some of them are, you know, if there's weather and travel issues, or if, you know, you are losing more than you ever expected, or someone just starts on this crazy hot pace and you think, oh, they're not going to sustain this. And so what's that going to mean, you know, for their confidence level? Or what, when you think about those things that have happened to you in the past, or what are the ones that you find are the most difficult to deal with early in the season? And in what ways do you kind of prepare, you know, for some of the things early on that may be, you know, a little bit more difficult to surmount than some others?
It's kind of a tough question.
It's a really long question too.
Well, I think, I don't know if this is like the correct way to answer it, but like, I think the truth is, as you ask those things and I'm like, man, I don't give a lot of thought to those things. Like I'm very short term memory. So, you know, I kind of just like pick up, like when you say like, you know, weather, travel issues, we try to prepare for some of that, like in our practice plans. Like for instance, today we did a two-a-day where they hit for an hour and then they had an hour and a half break and then they came back to the field. And that's not necessarily for volume purposes. That's for lightning delays, weather delays, the mentality to be warmed up, go back and sit, and then have to come back to the field and re-warm up and recreate that energy after having time off. I like to communicate that to them. Like it's no secret. So like today I explained to them, like there's a purpose behind this two a day. It's not to get as much as we can get done in day one. It's to start training that mentality from day one. Again, for what the game may physically and mentally demand of us. Losing more than expected. I think that I try not to linger too much in the past. I don't think I've ever really like sat back and been like, man, like we're losing more than we should be and like stay focused there. I'm like, all right, it hasn't gone our way. What do we need to do? And like the entire focus for me is on like what I want to happen. So again, like maybe I'm just not answering that, like understanding that question, awfully well, but, I think that when it comes for like preseason scenarios that are difficult to deal with, timing for the team is definitely a challenge. Making sure that in that game one, that pregame, that the emotions are balanced, that we've been here before in the sense of through our practices where our emotions don't spike, you know, and it goes back to something as minimal and detailed as like the music, you know, that they've done pregame before with a music on in practice so that on game day, that's just another day. You know, it's not game, all of a sudden it's not game day pregame and there's music and like energies and emotions start to get out of what we've practiced. And I think that, you know, going with the flow when field rules are different. So like one of the number one concerns going into opening weekend, playing in a tournament at a facility is, you know, you don't know what is going to be available for warmup, you know? So like in Gulf Shores specifically, if you're not the first team there, then you might not get an open field to hit on, or you might not get the cage. And then just like adapting on the fly and making sure as a staff that even though we can't control it, that we don't panic, that we find a way and that we're prepared to warm them up for the game. That's probably one of the more stressful things that when I think about opening weekend, that's definitely something that I try to plan out and have multiple options in our pockets of how we're going to warm up, given the fact that the game field stuff is different than a conference series where I get an hour and a half, you get an hour and a half, we split the cages, you know, where it's very organized.
You say you didn't understand the question. That was perfect. I might not okay. even understood it as I was asking it, but no, that's so true. And I love that practice idea with the lightning delay concept and, you know, everything for a reason, right? Everything for a reason and why you're doing the things you're doing. I think those are so crucial for programs. And you know, somebody said on a podcast recently, and I think it applies here too, you know, don't overreact. There are just some things that it's a long season. There are some things that, you know, we're quick to think is going to be an issue and maybe it's not. And that can be tough because you also, you know, you coach what matters and all of those things, of course. But I think those are great points and definitely things to keep in mind. You know, when you talk about the warm-up and you talk about the pregame, how much of the practices right now do you spend on hammering out those warm-ups so that they're able to go straight into them when you start here in a couple weeks?
Well, I think for us, consistency is key in that, where it's, you know, for our seniors, they've done the same pregame warm-up for 4 years now. So now you're really only working with those few on the infield, those few on the outfield that are trying to learn that pregame warmup and build that consistency in it. So I think that finding a warmup that works for your teams and sticking to it, you know, time and true year after year, and then obviously knowing the rules. So, you know, early on in my career, one of the first postseasons that we had got to, I remember feeling like anxious and rushed because here I had lollygagged, like I took my own time in our pregame warmup. And then now they're like 8 minutes off the field. Like, and I remember feeling emotion in that moment. And I remember thinking like, okay, I'm going to make sure that I'm prepared and my team's prepared to not feel these emotions ever again. Cause I do feel like it puts you at a disadvantage. It kind of shocks you. And really now your mind's on this timeline of a warm-up versus on the game and what you want to do and enjoying the moment. So, you know, day one today, before we went into left side, right side competition, we have 8 minutes for a pregame warmup. So we rolled through it. I mean, we have done it in the fall. So again, it's kind of like a retouch, refresh, but I'm also trying to minimize those emotions to a pregame warmup and just have it be a part of their everyday. So on game day, it's nothing new, nothing shocking. We've got a great manager, Kaylee, and she stayed on the clock today. I said, I want you to call it out at 6 minutes, 7 minutes. And then if it's eight and I haven't finished, I want you to call it out loud. So I know exactly where we're at in the pregame to know where we need to be come game day.
Well, and I think so many coaches right now have maybe a feeling of being overwhelmed or they're trying to get through so many things. And as you look around the country, there are so many pockets that are dealing with, you know, either resurgence of protocols from COVID-19 or weather or all of the above. What advice would you give to coaches who are really working through this preparedness plan and really trying to get their team ready that you feel guides your program in a really good way?
So I think keep it simple. And like, if you're not due to COVID or due to weather or due to something that you're maybe not allowed, you're not able to get out there and do that pregame warm up, or you're not able to hit a full field to do a first and third play, is like, you know, stay focused on keeping it slow and keeping it educated. Like a lot of the things that we do in life, we don't necessarily physically have to do 100 times over. There's a lot of power in seeing and watching and understanding the X's and O's mentally so that physically it becomes a little bit easier and more natural, right? So if I found myself in like the Northeast, like I would probably be going back through old game video and playing first successful first and third plays and unsuccessful first and third plays, and then having them explain, you know, the details of why it didn't work or why it did. And, you know, little things like that, you know, maybe they're physically not able to do it, but they mentally can see it and understand it. So then, you know, when they are able to hit the dirt, it'll come together a lot faster. In terms of like COVID, man, the reinsurgence of everything and these protocols, they're exhausting and draining. Just my best advice is try not to fight it. Like, right, you have an obstacle in front of you and you can keep running into it and knocking yourself down in the dirt. Or you can accept it for what it is and try to find a way around it, over it, or under it. And I don't mean in terms of breaking protocol. I mean, doing something that fits within the protocol. And it doesn't always have to be harder. It can just be smarter. So again, it can be through education, right? Because I really do think that that's a difference of a championship program is, do they understand why they're doing what they're doing? Like, is the process of what you're teaching them, does it become their own because they truly understand it? You know, one of the most beautiful things, again, by having some consistency in the program, right? Being blessed to be in the same place for multiple years and have, you know, staff that sticks around for several years, that consistency breeds consistency. So, you know, in a first and third play, I use that as an example because we obviously work those pretty hard here. But our upperclassmen, they actually will step in and assist me. So like I'll, for, you know, 11 years, like I forget to say some things sometimes. And my second baseman, M, she'll step up and be like, hey coach, like you forgot But catchers, make sure like you check the runner at third, like I'm watching your eyes and they're not cutting over there. And that's like a crucial detail. She's not even a catcher, but she's heard the same spiel for 3.5 years now that like she can pick up and correct something that's misspoken or not spoken. And I think that, you know, empowering them through education is crucial.
Yes. And there's so much power in that autonomy, because we know that our student athletes learn more from their peers, from their teammates, than they do from the coaches. You know, it's always amazing when you can see a teammate take someone else and really pull them along with them through the growth process, especially when they're younger. It's meaningful in so many different ways. So I think that's extremely well said. And Erin, just want to thank you for taking the time today. I know you've been at this grind all day. And so really appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck to you and your program as you guys get started here in just a few short weeks.
Thank you so much. I wish everybody a really good, you know, preseason into season, and hopefully COVID and everything else won't distract us too much from being able to play the game and coach the game that we love. So wishing everybody, you know, from coast to coast, a really good preseason and a great season.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. And we will be back next week, another brand new episode. Everyone, we are going to revisit a podcast from 5 years ago. And this is funny, Erin, I think you actually brought this up on our lineups, using data to determine your lineup. And so we did that podcast 5 years ago. We're going to go back and redo it again with Matt Michael, our statistical guru, and that will air next Wednesday. So stay tuned for that one. And until then, if you have any other ideas for podcasts, make sure you reach out. You can hit us on email, education@nfca.org, through social media, or give us a call. We're always, always happy to hear your suggestions. Until next time, this has been Joanna Lane, Senior Director of Education for the NFCA, and the Dirt NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals.
Thanks again for listening to the Dirt NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We encourage you to let us know what topics you would like covered in future episodes. Join us again next week for another exciting podcast.